1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Tough one last night for the Mariners. A chance to take the series against the Houston Astros, but it doesn't happen. Mariners go down to the Stros in Game 3 of the series. Astros win the series over the Mariners. We'll talk about that coming up. We're not going to get to the A's series until tomorrow. We're going to dive heavy into the A's series coming up. Biggest series of the year coming up this weekend, so we'll talk about that a lot in the podcast tomorrow. So we won't touch too much onto that in this one. This is going to be good, though. We're going to have a Shannon Dreyer conversation with Howard Johnson, the hitting coach, which is excellent, and Danny Farquhar, Mariners reliever. They talk about pitching. They also talk about base running as well. So that's good stuff coming up. And I'm going to play one of my favorites. I played way back in one of the early episodes, one of the first couple of episodes of the podcast. Here we are, number 107. An interview with Dave Niehaus and Ted Williams. Dave Niehaus interviewing Ted Williams. So that comes up later on in the podcast. First things first, though, the Astros have been a real problem for teams in contention. In their last eight ball games, they've taken 2 of 2 from the Angels, 2 of 3 from the A's, and now 2 of 3 from the Seattle Mariners. That is playing spoiler right there. They've played their part, and they've played it well. Since the trading deadline, they've been above 500. They're playing good baseball. They're playing really good baseball, and they take 2 of 3 from the Mariners. This is how it unfolded last night for the M's.
The Asashi Wakuma on the hill, and he looked very sharp early, getting a couple Ks in the first inning.
The 3-2 pitch, the Fowler swing and a miss, and an off-speed pitch for strike three, and that will retire the side. Couple of strikeouts already for Asashi Wakuma here in the top of the first, a 1-2-3 inning.
But then a red flag in the second inning as he walked someone, which never, ever, ever happens. A single as well. There's two outs in the frame, but big single to drive home a couple.
Swing and a line drive into the gap in left center field by Stassi. Singleton running third. He's going to score. Around to third goes Presley. He keeps coming. The relay by Miller to the plate, not in time. And Presley will score, reaching out for the plate. So two runs are in. Stassi will wind up on its second. And the Astros with two outs have two in.
Yeah, they would plate three in the second inning, another double after that as well. So three runs coming in the second frame. The Mariners, though, fight back in the bottom of the frame. Kyle Seager, a leadoff walk. Miller would single as well, and that would set up Mike Zunino.
The pitch on the way, swinging a well-hit ball into left center field. This one is going to get down extra bases. All the way to the track, to the wall. Seager will score. Rounding third, Brad Miller will score. The throw in is cut off by VR. Mike Zunino with a one-out, two-run double.
And then Altuve, who had really been held quiet in this series so far, and amazingly quiet considering the season that he has had, sitting on 200 hits, and he'd make some big noise in the fifth inning.
The pitch swung on, line drive, left field line. This one is going to be a fair ball. Gets down all the way to the wall. Heading for third is Grossman. He's going to be waved in. Up of the ball is Jones. The throw-in cut off by Miller. No relay home. Grossman will score. Jose Altuve with his first hit of the series, an RBI double.
And later on in the ballgame, he'd pick up hit number 200 on the season. Just the second time in Astros history, players had more than 200 hits in a season. Craig Biggio, the other one for Houston. And then what told the story late in the ball game, and Logan Morrison up at the plate, runner on first base, and this happened more than once.
0-1, swinging a bouncer over the mound. Here comes VR, the shortstop. He gloves, steps on second for one, a throw to first in time for a double play. That's the third time that the Astros have turned two tonight. And there are suddenly two outs with the bases clean.
Astros would tack on one more in the eighth inning. The Mariners would put a runner on in the ninth. And then Kyle Seager, a moonshot, but it'd be caught at the wall.
2-1 pitch, swing, and a high fly ball down the right field line. Going back into the corner is Presley. He's at the wall. He's there and makes the catch, and this ball game is over. Right at the wall down the right field line, and the Astros win it tonight. A final score of 5-2, and the Astros take the series 2-1, and Nick Trupiano, making his Major League debut tonight, comes away with the victory and start number one in the show.
So a frustrating loss as an opportunity goes by the wayside for the Mariners. The bright side, the Oakland A's loss in heartbreaking fashion again, as the Chicago White Sox scored two runs in the bottom of the eighth inning with two outs again, trailing 1-0. They get to the A's bullpen after Samardzija was excellent. So the White Sox come through. They beat the A's. Detroit loses to Kansas City. Big game. James Shields gets it done for the Royals. And now the A's in a situation where they play tonight while the Mariners have an off day against Chris Sale. So Chris Sale going for Chicago. And this is a big one because this is half a game. Right now, the Mariners sit 2 games back of the Oakland A's. Half a game's big right now either way. A's win, 2.5 back. A's lose, 1.5 back, coming to Seattle and then facing Paxton in game one, Felix Hernandez in game two. So watch closely tonight. It's going to be a big one between the Oakland A's and the Chicago White Sox. This game, though, it can be summed up by Lloyd McClendon. He summed up this one in few words.
Kuma had a bad outing. Our hitters had a bad outing. Our defense had a bad outing. Everything was bad. It's just one of those days, yeah.
Just one of those days. So flush it, move on. That's it. And now it's all about Oakland coming up this weekend. But again, they play Chris Sale and the White Sox coming up tonight. That should be a good one. Chris Sale, one of the best there is in baseball. But right now, let's give it over to Shannon Dreher as she had a conversation with Mariners hitting coach Howard Johnson.
Kyle is he's way better than a lot of people realize. He is probably one of the most consistent players that we have, and he's got this ability to separate his offense and his defense. So even if he's not hitting, he's playing great defense. And you know, Kyle is just kind of bought into everything. He's still a young player. He's reaching a lot of career highs right now in different things. So you know, for him, it's uncharted waters for him. But he's got one of the, I always tell him, he's got one of the top three brains of guys on the team. And what I say by that, this is not necessarily, you know, mental capacity or, you know, smarts, but it's more the ability to forget and to move on and not get bogged down with a bad day or a bad at bat.
Two younger players that I want to ask you about. Mm-hmm. And Brad Miller obviously had some struggles this year, and we're seeing the hits right now, which is great.
Yeah.
And Mike Zunino, who just brings so much for the pitching and the catching aspect, and the ceiling, I would imagine, is pretty high. But we've also seen him get a few extra days off of late.
Yes.
We've seen good results, and I think from both. Does that help? How does that help? I mean, does that kind of force them to take a step back and look at things different? Are they able to work on things different? Has this helped those two players?
No, there's no question about it, Shannon, because, you know, it's a long season. It's a grueling year. When you count spring training and the amount of games that you play, you're playing almost 200 games. And, I mean, it's a long year. And, you know, Mike's case is so different because not only does he have to hit, but he has to catch. He has to catch, you know, probably the best pitching staff in baseball. And, you know, so we don't want to disturb that and disrupt that. And as much as, you know, Z wants to be successful and hit and do all those things, you know, that's also a learning process as well. So we can't get ahead of ourselves. We have to make sure that we give him just enough to compete, to learn, try to get better, but he's got to take care of that staff, and that's really his main priority. And along the way, we're gonna, you know, figure out the hitting stuff. And he's come a long way recently, and getting the days off now really helps, because you know, Sucre's been up here, he's done a great job. The pitchers like throwing to him, and that gives us a chance to kind of rest, you know, mm-hmm. Zunino, and keep him fresh. Mm-hmm. And the same with Miller. I mean, you know, Chris Taylor's come up here, done a really nice job, you know, made a nice adjustment to the major leagues. And, you know, Mills being here and not playing and kind of, you know, not really fighting that, he kind of understood. I think that was the biggest thing. He understood what was going on and accepted that. And then, you know, tried to find ways to improve during the time that he wasn't playing, so that when the opportunity came back to play, he could be productive, and that's what's happened.
That's not an easy thing, learning while you're competing, and we're seeing both.
It's the hardest thing, really, Shannon, to try to develop and win at the major league level. Yeah. It's probably the toughest dance you got to do, and you know, we've been real fortunate. We got really good kids, and you know, Lloyd's done a great job with these guys, giving them the right amount of playing time and you know, talks and things like that. So it's been good.
Yeah, it's been great to see. Howard, thank you.
You got it, Shannon.
And now back to Shannon once again, a chance this time to talk to Danny Farquhar, pitcher/pinch runner.
Danny, it's kind of fun to look at your numbers the last couple of days, and the first thing that jumps out are the two big W's. You're coming in good times right now.
Yeah, I mean, perfect times. You know, you go throw the scoreless inning, and the team puts up a bunch of runs in the next inning, and you end up with a W.
You know, we look out at the dugout, and we've said it before, but you guys have got to be the biggest cheerleader for your offense. You guys are in on everything when those guys are out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're down in the bullpen, you know, for 5-6 innings, not really doing much because our starters go so deep into games. And we got to figure out, you know, some kind of way to keep ourselves busy. And we figured out that cheering for our team and having, you know, cheers for each player and, you know, that's the way to go.
Did you have to, like, add a bunch? Because you've got some new guys right now.
Yeah. Chris Taylor, he came in. Joe got a good one for him. He's a timid kid. there's some other guys. It's fun.
You know, you look at your season, and one of the things that really jumps out is just remarkable consistency, just start to finish. And obviously, you've got to be making adjustments. How does that change as the year goes on and you see teams more often?
Yeah, actually like facing teams more often because then I know their hitters and their tendencies and, you know, the pitches they like to hit, the pitches they don't like to hit. You know, where I talk to some other guys and they're like, oh, I love facing guys for the first time, you know, so they've never seen me before. Or I guess I'm a different kind of pitcher where it's more like, I guess, a little dance for me, you know, keeping hitters off balance, you know, as opposed to having the nasty stuff in the bullpen. You know, I just like to go out there and pitch and get the outs.
What's the biggest, when you arrived on the scene last year, you had a good idea of who you were as a pitcher, but you still hadn't had a ton of time in the league. What's the biggest learning that you've had this year with that?
Is exactly what you said, is consistency. Is, you know, you go out there and you give up a run, you know, that next out, and you can't do it again. You gotta throw up that zero and then try to continue, you know, on the good. When things are going bad, you just gotta ride the train real quick. That's the biggest thing I've learned about the big leagues, is you can't let bad last too long.
How much of that is mental and how much of that is preparation? If you do have an outing like that, what do you do after?
Yeah, I mean, my preparation is the same every day, you know, work out, run, have my pregame routine, you know, contrast tubs, get my treatment from the trainers. So that stays consistent. The rest is mental and not letting the outside factors affect you.
So you get towards the end of the year and you know that there might be a little bit more coming up. Physically, do you do anything different?
No. Try to do the same thing, same preparation, same everything, and you know, hopefully we keep winning.
Your base running, we haven't had a chance to talk about that yet. As you look back a couple of days ago, what are you going to remember about that moment?
That was probably the most fun I've ever had playing baseball. I'm sitting in the bullpen, and you know, Coach Lloyd calls down, and
Come here.
He says, "Farquhar, get running to the dugout. You know, leave your glove. You're going to pinch run for Morales." And so I put Chris Taylor's helmet on, straight panic mode. I'm shaking. I'm so nervous. And it's 3-0 count on Kendrys. I turn to Smoke and I'm like, dude, no way this is happening. Kendrys ends up walking, and that was an absolute blast. Going first to third on a base hit. And, you know, it was sad that I didn't end up scoring, but it was fun.
Danny, great to see you in whatever capacity you're out there on. I prefer you actually throwing the baseball, but that was good too.
Great. Thanks for having me, Shan.
And now to wrap things up, one of my favorites, one of the very favorite things I've played on this podcast, a conversation between Dave Niehaus and the great Ted Williams.
Ted, first of all, tonight the Mariners open a series against the Baltimore Orioles. And Cal Ripken is 95 games away from one of the greatest records that they said would never be broken. Yep. What is your perspective on Ripken's streak?
Well, it's absolutely marvelous and sensational and tremendous. To play that many games without missing one, I can't hardly conceive of it, because I know that you can get a blister on the wrong part of your hand and you can't play. Or you get a little broken little part of your finger and you can't hold a bat. And just so many things. You get hit in the elbow and you can't play. And he's a big, strong guy and is always in there. And, hell, is a great credit to this game.
Your rookie year, 1939, was the year that Gehrig's streak of 21-30 ended. What do you remember about the Iron Horse?
Well, in spring training that year, I had in the clubhouse, we had a little clubhouse in Sarasota, and I could hear, and I was right close to the trainer's room, and I could hear all the old writers coming in, you know, and say, Gehrig doesn't look good at all. You know, he can't hit the ball, and he can't do this. And I said, well, what the hell, he's 38 years old, you know. He's probably over the hill. And, of course, in those days, I think ball players did quit a little bit earlier. They got the incentive to play longer now if they're making $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $1 million. You know, that incentive to play is even more more prevalent. And so, but anyway, I saw Gehrig, and I walked up the stairs, up to the clubhouse, followed him, because all the players went up to the Yankee side, then they went over to their side of the dugout. And I remember following him. I never actually met Gehrig, but I was I watched him and looked at him and everything, you know. And, well, if you compare his records with anybody, well, he's right there, and there's no way you can't say. Boy, what a player.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing before I get into your career that I was just awestruck. I don't know if you remember last year we had a problem up here with the Kingdom when the tiles fell.
And oh, yes.
And we had to reassume the season at Fenway Park in Boston. And I swear to God, when I die, I want my ashes put under the plate there. But anyway, that's another story. That particular series was picked up in Boston. Everybody was allowed to come in for $10. They had to open the ballpark there on Yawkey Way a couple of hours before, and it was like lemmings swimming to the sea when the kids tried to get those great seats. But at any rate, I remember on a Sunday afternoon after that final game, and I've always been in awe of that red seat out there 502 feet away from home plate. People in line, and they couldn't get them out of the ballpark. It almost brought tears to my eyes as they waited just to sit in that red seat. And I think I was talking to either Joe Gelati or Peter Gammons or somebody like that. And he said, you know, when Ted hit that home run off Freddie Hutchinson, there was no seat there. There were bleachers. Is that true?
No, I think it is true. But they had the seats numbered, because the only way I could tell anybody or they could authenticate the actuality of it all was that this guy was sitting up there with a straw hat, and the ball, he reached up to the ball, and the ball hit him in the hat and put a hole in, you know, kind of crushed it. And the next day, his picture was in the paper, and they give the seat number and everything else, you know. So Sullivan was there, and I told him about that ball, and I said, all you got to do is check the papers. They'll tell you exactly where the ball was. So what we did this one day, it was just sitting there looking at the park. So he pursued it, and he got exactly the spot. And then they painted the seat red. And that's certainly one of the best balls I hit. But everything was with me, and I got it in the air, and I hit it real good, and the wind was blowing out, and he just kept going. And Freddie Hutchinson was so mad. Ooh.
I'll bet he was mad. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable that a man can hit the ball that far.
Yeah, I know. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah.
Okay, why did you pick Junior for your first award, your Hitter of the Year award?
Well, we just had to. Here's a young kid that I saw him in the All-Star game, the first All-Star game I ever saw him play in. And the first time up, he hit a line drive, low line drive, into left center. Center, left center. And boy, was I impressed the way he hit that ball. And, of course, he just started going from there. He just started to blossom all the way. And I'm really, really happy for him, because his dad was one of the best-liked players, and I didn't even know him, but I knew he was well-liked. And when he said anything, he had a great smile. And than this kid coming along. I can't think of anything that is greater than to see your own kid excel in a sport that you played in. And he certainly is excelling. And I hear more people talk about his hitting, although the other kid is hitting like hell too, Bobby Bond. But they say more about Ken Griffey. Bond has got tremendous talent. But Ken Griffey, geez, tough.
I got on tape, and one of my favorite interviews was the one you did last year with Costas. I thought it was a classic.
With who? Oh, Costas?
Yeah. And your reaction to what everybody has asked you, you've often been quoted as wanting to be known as the best damn hitter who ever lived. And I thought your answer was really great. If you can, as you went through all your records, you said, I don't know, but I know I was one of them, right?
Yeah. I always said, most of the time I've always said that, and I've kept real track of all the hitters because that was my greatest interest in the game. And I've seen them and I've looked at them, I've studied them and I've talked to them and I've asked them. And I want to tell you that my final answer would have to be that, well, I can't say in my own mind, honestly, that I think I was the best hitter. But I said, if they'll put me in a group of Ruth and Gehrig and Simmons and Fox and DiMaggio and Greenberg and Heilman and Cobb, I said, that'll be good enough for me. And I think that that's the way I really feel. All those guys, you know, were the best, that's all.
And you were probably the best of the best.
Well, I don't know about that at all, but I do know that I had a great time writing this book with Jim Prime, the 20 Greatest Hitters. And I'll tell you, that's a tough assignment. I thought, hell, we'll name them off. You can name the first 10 or 12 pretty good. But now you got a group of about 20 in there that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
And you really got to separate them analytically, as just with every aspect. And the big thing about it is they got a formula now that includes percentage of times on base, and that is a very, very, very big factor. And of course, the slugging percentage is a very, very, very big factor.
One of the great pieces of sports journalism, I think, is John Updike's story about last at bat about God don't answer curtain calls. I was just wondering, when you rounded the bases your last at bat, you had hit that home run, you went back to the clubhouse. What did you do then? What was going through your mind then?
Well, I was, the guys were all telling me to take a bow or do something, and I just couldn't do that. I pretty near thought about tipping my hat, but I didn't. I was emotionally, uplifted a little bit, but I would never come close to doing it, but I thought about it. But when I went back to clubhouse, I mean, I went out to go out the next inning, and then he sent somebody out behind me, and I came in. But, I'm pretty lucky to do that.
Memorial Day is Monday. You served in both World War II and Korea. You lost a lot of your baseball career, by the way, but maybe even a shot at the then-record 714 home runs. But what does Memorial Day mean to you about serving your country?
Well, I'm patriotic, but I'm not... I'm not Mickey Mouse about it, where I'm gushy, but I look back now and I say, well, I'm glad I had a chance to do that. It's an experience that you'd never want to think that you could have it happen, and then after it's all over, and you didn't really appreciate until it was all over that you were a lucky guy to get through all the. Everything that happens to a young player, everything that happens to anybody going to the service, anything that happens through life, especially during a war, too, I'll tell you, you got to be lucky.
Mm-hmm. When you entered the Hall of Fame, the things you said, one of the things you said was it was time that some of the great players from the Negro League should
yep.
be
yep. Yep.
in Cooperstown as well.
That was ingrained in my mind way back in 1930, 31, 32, 34. I played in high school. His name was Leo Thompson, and he lived in the littlest and simplest of a little house that I ever saw in San Diego in that area that I lived at. and he was a tremendous little athlete. He wasn't a very big guy, but he was a good athlete. Hell of a little ball player, good little football player, good little boxer. And I've asked 100 times when I've been back to San Diego about, does anybody ever know what happened to Leo Thompson? And I don't know whatever happened to him, but I've asked. And it'd be fun to kind of find out, but he must be an old guy now like I am. And so you never know. Maybe he was in a war. Maybe he had a problem or something. But so I've always felt in my heart maybe a little more thoughtfulness and regarding people that didn't have quite the chance that other people had.
Mm-hmm.
And still, maybe that's one of the reasons I get even a little more bitter when I see riots.
Right.
And that type of thing. And I get mad to think that, that things like that happen. But that was a thing that I had ingrained in me a long, long time.
Ted, you won a couple of Triple Crowns in 42-47, yet neither time did you win the MVP award, last man to hit 400.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, you know, I don't know what happened. One time, what was it, 42?
Yeah.
Well, Gordon had the best year he ever had in his life. Yankees won the pennant, and they used to put even more strength on that when they voted for the most valuable player. And that's possible, certainly, to win the most valuable player without winning the pennant. I mean, it's possible to be most valuable player without winning the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that Gordon, being he was a hell of a player, should be in the Hall of Fame. Jeez.
Right.
And of course, when I didn't get it, when I hit 400, DiMaggio had one of the super great years in the history of the game. And he was truly a great, great, great ball player.
Yeah.
And then the other time, I don't know the other time. Which one's the other time you're talking about?
42-47.
Huh?
1947.
47.
Yeah. Did you win the Triple Crown in 47?
42 and 47?
Yeah.
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 Okay. But I don't even know who got it in 47. Who got it?
Joe DiMaggio.
DiMaggio.
Yeah.
Well, I never felt badly about the year he won the streak and the year that he won the most valuable player. I wouldn't argue against either one of those.
Okay. Now, I want to get your comments, and you read the papers every day. You know what has happened to this game. You know what happened August the 12th last year. You know the resentment that the fans have had. You know that attendance is down 25%. TV ratings are down, and they say it's a dying sport. How about your perspective on the game today and what can be done to rejuvenate it?
Well, I don't think it's a dying sport at all. And I tell you, I can feel, because I had the same feeling. I said, what the hell is going on? What do they want? What does management want? What do the players want? They have representation, and I still feel badly they couldn't get together on it a little better, because the end result was that a lot of fans got turned off a little bit. But this game is so great. This game is so great that it'll get going just the way it was, I'll bet you. And it'll take a little bit of time because the present player excites the fan to the point where he wants to go to the game. The name that's being created, that's a great player or an outstanding player or a stimulation to a city and a locality, starts getting the fans worked up. And I think that guys like Bonds and guys like Griffey and guys like that big hitting third baseman out there.
Matt Williams?
Huh?
Matt Williams with the Giants?
Oh, yes, sir. Boy, does he rack them. And then you got other guys. Gee, there's a lot of... I see more talent, honestly. I see more talent, I think, than I've ever seen in this game before. I mean, I see catches. Cripe, I never saw catches like that. Even, you know, they go straight out and 10, 12 feet and catch one right off the grass.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
I see things like... I see speed. I see bodies that are super and talent that's super. And... it just shows you that this is a pretty hard game to play the way you'd really like to play it.
Who was the first manager that used the Williams shift on you, and how did you react to it? How did you attack it?
Well, I was hitting just like gangbusters. Boy, I was hitting the ball all over the place. And it was against Cleveland, and I had just won the first game in the 11th inning with a home run. And I was hitting like gangbusters all year, and then when I came out in the second game, they had all kinds of graphs and all kinds of charts to where I hit the ball and where I didn't hit the ball and who I hit it against. And he came out that second game. It was Boudreaux, a great player and a great manager in my book, because he handled the staff all year, and he won the Most Valuable Player Award. I think that's probably one of the most complete years anybody in baseball ever had, because he not only managed, he hit great and he fielded great, and he just carried the whole thing. And I don't think there's ever a player that had a more complete year than he did.
How many times in your career were you asked to bunt, or did you ever?
Oh, I never get the bunt sign. Never. Never.
You never sacrifice?
No, I never got no bunt signs. No, I never got a bunt sign. Never did.
Oh, mercy.
I never got a steal sign. The only time I ever tried to steal, and surprisingly, I think I stole about 35 bases, I never stole. I never got a steal sign. But if I got hit with a ball or something, I'd be mad, you know. Then I'd try to do it. And that's what I must have done most of them, because I never stole any other time.
Would you have done anything differently?
I don't know what I could have done differently. They asked me that the last day I played. And the only thing I said, and I know I was right when I said it, I'd have tried to get stronger. Now, I broke my shoulder, and I'm taking a lot of rehabilitation to try to get it going again. And I know that that exercise is all important, and you can develop stronger shoulders and develop stronger arms, and you can even up your speed with the right kind of training. And I never realized that so much, because until I've had to go through things. And I did say the last day, I said, if I did anything different, I'd try to get stronger, and I know that's right.
Finally,
I would say now, I would add one other thing. I'd say quickness is stronger. Because till the last time you go to bat, you say, I got to be quick, I got to hang in here, you know?
Is it true that your eyesight was so good you could literally see the seams on the baseball?
Oh, geez, I want to vomit when I hear that.
Is that right?
Probably some sports writer thought that.
Yeah. Oh, mercy.
You can't see no seams on the ball. It looks a little reddish, but it's spinning and it's coming in there fast. Hell no, I must have been a frustrated sports writer that couldn't hit.
And also, you know, you've heard this story, too. You've heard this comment, too, and I've even used it on the air in talking about you, about when you were managing both Washington and Texas, that you hated your own pitchers as much as any other pitcher. Is that true?
No. In fact, some of the best friends I've ever had were pitching on that team. Boy, I'd like to see how good we could do today with that team we had, because it was a lot better team than anybody thought it was.
Uh-huh.
And we started to roll a little bit, and hell, we were playing the last week of the season trying to beat the Red Sox out of position in the pennant race.
Yeah.
Not for first place, but for 3-4-5.
Finally, my partner on television is Ron Fairley. What kind of a hitter was Ron?
Ron was a great-looking hitter. He reminded me, he wasn't that big, I didn't think. What is he, 5'10 and 175?
Yeah, not now, but he used to be 175, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But he was a good-looking hitter, and I used to look at him, and even though I didn't play very much against him, I looked at him, and all I could think about was O'Doul, Lefty O'Doul. He was a stylish-looking hitter and a damn good one.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, and finally this, just for my own personal edification, I've got a lot of your memorabilia because if my daughter had been a son, she would have been a Ted Williams Niehaus, by the way. but I have in my game room, in my den, and I'm sure there are thousands of them across America, that picture of you wrapped in the towel at Fenway Park with a bat in your hand. What year was that?
Oh, it was, I would think that it would be in 39 or 40, maybe. Yeah, I'm wrapping the towel, and Christ, I got a bat holding in the locker room.
That's right.
Yeah, and then they got another one of me holding a bat and at the foot of a bed, and now I'm going to hit the leg on the bed, you know. Jesus Christ.
Well,
I didn't have a bat in my hand an awful lot.
One of these days I'm going to get that to you and have you order.
But I'll have a chance to sit down with you.
Hey, Ted, you don't know what a thrill this is, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. You're a good guy.
And God bless you. How's the eyesight? Is it coming back a little bit?
Well, yes. My eyesight is not as good, of course, as it was. But I'm not blind, but my field of vision is so narrowed down, you know. And but I walk with a cane and if it's light down the street, but I there may be somebody walking right to the left of me and I don't see him, you
right,
know.
Right, you have tunnel vision, in other words.
Yeah,
right.
The peripheral vision went a little bit.
Yeah, you get a chance.
I'm getting along good, and I appreciate your kind remarks, and John Henry says you're a hell of a guy.
Thank you. And God bless you, Ted. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Right. Bye-bye.